Well, I've known Joy Melchizedek for a long time now, or many lifetimes, really. But if you want to get down to it, okay, millions of years. Let's just tell it like it is. And Joy is in Pennsylvania. We have a special show with Flo coming up today. First of all, I'd like to introduce Joy. How you doing, Joy?
Hi, how are you, TJ?
Great. What have you been doing with yourself?
Well, I've been busy over here writing and doing stuff with children and sessions and healing myself and just having a grand time. And I actually have had visitors come and stay with me, and one of them recently was Flo. And that's kind of how we got started with the vision, with what we're going to cover today.
So our special guest,
very exciting.
Our special guest is Flo Aivia Magdalena. Did I say it correctly, Flo's name?
You did, TJ. Thank you so much for learning that. That's a lot of vowels for us in this particular continent.
And Flo, where are you at right now? Where are you talking to us from today?
Yeah, I'm in Vermont.
And
in
where,
Vermont.
And is that where you live most of the time, or you do a lot of traveling as well?
Yeah, I do a lot of traveling, but Vermont is my home base. Yeah. And it's a place, I have some land and a vision of a mountain called the Monad Mountain, Monadnock. Mm. And it's a very beautiful mountain, and it reminds me of places that we can go to find peace and solace. So that's what I find here in Vermont, yeah.
So go ahead, Joy.
Flo, wasn't that land dedicated to world peace, too?
Well, when I moved here, there was a legend that I was told that when seven women surrounding the mountain of Monadnock are working for the harmony and peace through the feminine, there will be world peace. That's what I was told when I moved here.
Wow.
Just by people who live here, you know, that seven women are going to rise around the base of the mountain and bring that forth. So it's a lovely intention either way, you know.
Well, I feel like some of us should take a trip to Vermont soon. I think it's time.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, very exciting news.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. So, TJ, I think you had some questions.
Yeah, I was just going to lead into how, where we're going on this is that Flo wrote the book, I Remember Union, and was that, when was that, 2000-ish, somewhere in that neighborhood when you wrote that book, or was it before then?
Well, I had an experience with Christ and Magdalene in 1989. In fact, we're coming up to the 29th anniversary of that for the Easter weekend at the end of March here in 2018. And I wrote the book. It took me about 3 years to publish it, and I published it on Valentine's Day of 1992.
Okay, so I was a little off.
Yeah.
It's been around for quite a while.
It's been a long time, It's been a long time, and it's been percolating. So it's exciting to be talking about it today with you.
So part of the reason we're going to talk about today is how the inspiration for the book came forward, and also more of there's a potential movie in the works. There's this is the time that we feel that we need to really more than ever. What happened 2,000 years ago applies to today, and there are many of us that were around perhaps at that time period that are back now and seeing some of this come forward, and we chose to be here. So where do you want to start in all this? Joy, do you want to take the lead on that?
Sure. Now, Flo, I remember I met you in 1992, and you just had the book coming out. Remember that?
I do.
Yes. And, during that time, I think you said it took you 3 years to write the book. I just wanted to briefly get into the part when you start the book and you have the visions. That was in 1989, right? March
yes.
of 1989.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
When that was coming in, those visions when they were coming in, did you have any clue before any of this happened that you had some profound connection to Mary Magdalene.
Well, in 1987, at the Harmonic Convergence, which was in August of 1987, I had a reading exchange with a man named Piet van der Horst, and he said at the end of the reading that he gave me, "You were very close to Christ. You were one of the disciples." And I said immediately, "I must have been the whore." And that's, you know, that's kind of an energy that I really, in a sense, connected to even without knowing it. I just said that out loud.
Yeah.
Then, in 1988, during Easter, I cried the whole Easter, you know, the whole Easter, and I had no idea why. And then in 1989, I went to D.C. I was actually in D.C. at that point for about a year working. I had clients in D.C., and I would go back and forth. And at that point in time, I lived in Connecticut. And this particular weekend, I was supposed to go into the mountains, and it was raining really hard, and people said to me, "Don't go into the mountains because it will be snow." And I had a T-bird at the time, so it wasn't the best idea. So I went to church after hearing in my mind, "You must go to church." And I'm like, "Well, what's that about?" But I went, and it was Maundy Thursday. And standing at the communion table, I actually saw Christ above the left shoulder of the minister as he was performing the ritual of the Last Supper. And from there were interactions that were, I guess I could say, impressions that I received that were words, but I didn't hear them with my ears. And as they came forward, they began to show me the relationship between Christ and Magdalene, the relationship between the players, 144,000 of us actually at that time, how we all related to each other and how we created this Indra's net of connection, so that everyone had a role to play in this huge drama of the resurrection. And it just started to unfold. The first image I got was of the Sermon on the Mount, walking. I felt my feet dusty, you know, and in a sense, all sandy, and I was tired, and we were walking to this particular place where Christ would deliver the Sermon on the Mount. And then from there, I had isolated events happening in my mind about the story of Christ, and I had my whole life been much more connected to Jesus than I was to God. You know, I saw all these movies, you know, The Fisherman and everything, and when I was a little girl, and I just had this connection, but I didn't know what it meant. And then, as the pieces were coming in, I didn't think too much about it, you know, and then one day I woke up, and the sentence was in my mind, "You must write the story of Mary Magdalene."
Wow.
And I've been doing metaphysics since 1979, so that's a long, long time. And when something comes into my mind and says, "Do this," I just do it. I don't ask questions because I don't know enough to ask the questions, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I understand. Mm-hmm. Wow. So while this was going on, how long did the visions present themselves to you? Was it like over a week or a month or a day, or how long did that go on?
Years, yeah.
So were you writing the book while you were getting the visions?
Yeah, I was actually driving around D.C. one day. I was actually going home, and I lived in Potomac, because after this happened, it happened in McLean, Virginia, and I immediately went down to D.C. I left where I was living, and I got a house in Potomac, and I stayed there for a year. And I wrote the most of the book I wrote when I was in Potomac, in Maryland. And so I felt like I needed to be there because there was all kinds of people then. It was an amazing community. And I wrote most of the book then. And then I actually went to Australia, and I wrote the end of the book there. And then I came back and wrote more. And all the time, I was working with my editor, Jane, my friend and editor. And we were, in a sense, preparing the book for publication, even though I was still getting and receiving information. So it was about a three-year period until it was actually published.
So it was all happening simultaneously, like a wave. right?
Yeah, like a wave. And the interesting thing was, Joy and TJ, I was so absorbed in that world 2,000 years ago that once I published the book and began to move around the country and actually present it, I took it in my van. You know, I took it to different bookstores in California and in Santa Fe and all over the place, and I took the book physically.
Yeah.
And said, would you buy this book? And they all said yes. Yeah. Everybody said yes. And they bought the book. And that's how the book got out. It was very much a pilgrimage in a sense.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then it was this thing of, well, I'm in the 20th century, so which life am I going to live? Because that profundity, I mean, it was amazing how we can be absorbed in those lifetimes that have such impact on now. And I had to put it aside. So for a number of years, I kind of put it on the back burner and began to, you know, kind of cultivate my own pathway in the 20th century. And now it's looping back. It's coming into... Magdalene is so strong now in the world. So many voices are speaking about her that I'm feeling that it's time to come back around and begin that process again, in a sense.
Yes, and thank you. Thank you for doing this and doing it the first time. I know you were the one that did the first, brought her forward. I know that. I know that. I have no question. I've dreamt it. I've seen it. And in my experience, I know there's many aspects of Magdalene, but in reading your book, I found that there's a vibrational link to truth for me that gives me a gauge for other frequencies, like when I'm reading other books. I personally had dreams, and your book affected me so profoundly. It changed my life. It really did. I cannot thank you enough. And what you're doing right now with holding this, holding it all and walking forward with it again, the world has been waiting for you, and we are so grateful that you are coming forward. Thank you. Thank you. And now I know TJ has some questions, so I can wipe my eyes off a bit, okay?
Sure. So when you said that you were being, that you were connected to Christ, did you feel like he was physically around you, communicating with you when you were writing this book, or Mary Magdalene?
Well, what I do, TJ, in my everyday practice is to channel the ones with no names, and they are galactic guidance counselors that truly give us the context for each life. And so I was writing the book with whatever I received. I didn't do research. I didn't try to figure out, well, I want to do some chapter on this person. I waited for there to be information or connection to someone through my life, and that's the way it was. And the, one of the reasons, I guess I should explain, that I was so absorbed in the 2,000-year-old story was that there were parallel lifetimes happening where I would sit with someone and give them a reading from the Nameless Ones, and at the end of the reading, the Nameless Ones would say, almost, you know, by the way, they would say, and you were this person at the time of Christ, and this was your relationship with whomever it was. And I remember one time I was at the Light Center, which was at the time the Cambodian Embassy on 16th Street in D.C., and I'm in the garden, and I'm giving a reading to this fellow named Tom from Ohio. And they said to him, and you were Pontius Pilate. Well, I'm sitting there, you know, 20th century, and we're in the garden, and all of a sudden, I'm in stress response. And there was within me a reference point that connected to Magdalene's connection to Pontius Pilate and to this fellow Tom, and I'm sitting there. The Magdalene aspects of me, and I was just an aspect of her. I wasn't her, you know. I was an aspect of her, and that aspect, that energy exchange frequency, however we might think about that, began to respond to the fact that Mary was also sitting across from Pontius Pilate, the same way that I was sitting across from this fellow Tom. So the feeling of knowing Christ or knowing someone that was in the book or was part of the story happened in ways that segued to bring the full message. So sometimes it was Christ, sometimes it was Mother Mary, sometimes it was Naomi, who was the helper of Magdalene and who assured her safety. Sometimes it was Joseph of Arimathea. I would meet an aspect of Joseph of Arimathea. So it was not just Christ speaking to me about it, it was each of the players, because each one had a very important part to play in the whole story.
So I was just going to say Judas keeps popping up. That includes Judas, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
And Mary's sister Martha, yes. Yeah, all kinds of things. Her father, the rabbi, her mother, what happened at the Sea of Galilee, how they learned how to shapeshift reality and walk with water, you know, in a way that the consciousness was related back and forth and request things of nature. All of these amazing aspects that we think of as magic, you know, were about communicating with levels of creation that are available to all of us.
Is that where?
Yes. Go ahead, TJ.
I was going to say, is that what you think we're going to return to, Flo, is beings of unlimited consciousness like that?
Absolutely. I truly believe that that's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you were sharing, too, you were talking about how there were ways that you guys experienced magic together. So I remember reading in the book how Mary Magdalene trained Christ, right, how to work with the elements and how to shapeshift things and all manner of things, right?
Yes, and we do that now, Joy, with the soul recognition work.
Sure.
Because
sure.
What she did was take Christ into the void.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
That there wasn't anything really that mattered to him. Except
yes.
Being in the center of creation.
Yes, I really get that. Yes.
Yeah, it diminishes our fear, our egoic, you know, what's going to happen kind of idea, the how, what, when, where, who kind of ideas that the mind has to know before we can move forward. And we go into that void, and then all of a sudden we're in creation, and that's when the magic happens. I had so much magic happening for those 3 years. I cannot even tell you the pieces that came into place, the people that showed up, the energies that were available. It was like I was walking on water in my consciousness all the time to wherever I needed or wanted to go without
wow.
even knowing where that was. And it would just show up. And then I would follow it, and it would manifest yeah. whatever it was that I needed. It was just amazing, amazing.
Okay, and that was the journey while you were writing the book, right?
Yes.
And since that happened, have you gone through a kind of integration with those energies where you maintain them as a natural part of your life right now?
I'm working on it. I'm working
yeah.
on it. And I wish I could say 100% yes. I'm working on it. And one of the things that I feel the movie that we're doing of the book will assist us with is bringing those skillful means into our lives every moment in a more direct way, because we can see how the bridges can be formed.
Sure.
So what we're going to do in the movie is create the bridges from those skillful means into the time we're living now, because this is the time that it's most important, it feels like. You know, this is the time of the coming together.
Sure. Now, when you were writing the book, though, I know I keep reflecting back to it, but I'm trying to get these questions, and there's something here. When you were writing the book and you were having the experience, did you have any idea when you were writing the book the magnitude of how this would affect people?
I really don't think I did.
Okay.
I was hopeful mm-hmm. that it would affect the life that people were living because they could integrate the truth of it, because there's a lot of truth in the book. And basically what I mean by that is that the principles that are espoused in the book are clearly spiritual principles that even our dogmatic religions, our more dogmatic religions, would say yes to. You know, it's not that these are out of the scope or the realm of even the most devout Buddhist, Catholic. You know, it doesn't matter where we even, those individuals who may not believe in a source as a being the same as their source, you know, the principles are kindness, compassion, acceptance, non-judgment, you know, those kinds of things. And I was hopeful that it would make an impact. And the interesting thing is that it's now being used, this book is being used as a principle, let's just say manual, for courses like the Magdalene Healing Course that Sai Ma is bringing forth. People are beginning to call it into being, and I have a sense, a true sense, that its time is coming now, after almost 30 years, and that the importance of it is being established in our consciousness as a people. And it's one element of that consciousness, one way of affecting that consciousness, and that it's beginning to be more and more of a bridge to that consciousness. So I'm hopeful that it will, and that the movie will actually make it more intently real to people about what they can do and how they can do that for choosing peace in their lives. Because I think underneath all of our striving is this intention to live peacefully.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. TJ.
I was going to ask, I'm glad you came to me. Thanks, Joy. I was going to ask, because this is what I'm seeing more and more of, and I'm guessing both of you are well aware of this, obviously, but really the timing of this relates to the divine feminine. Really, I feel, is stepping up right now stronger than ever, and it is time for it to do that. So this all is coincidentally happening, really, to push us so that balance can come in, that energy can come forward. Do you feel that way, Flo?
Absolutely, TJ. It feels to me like the ground of everything that we're going to do as a species, in a sense, depends upon our connection to the divine feminine, to the earth, to Pachamama, to this. I just came back from Peru and Bolivia, and what was amazing, like a takeaway from there, was how individuals do not make decisions without the approval, the sensation of connection to the Mother of Earth, and the tribute to her, and giving her gifts, and aligning with her divine intention is something that happens before choices are made, before buildings are built, and before whatever happens in terms of those choices to affect people. There has to be, in their consciousness, a connection to the divinity and the resource of the mother. And so every time now that I draw water out of the tap, I say, thank you, Pachamama. And I never thought about it before. So it feels to me like even those of us who have been, in quotes, you know, on a spiritual path, have much more to offer in terms of gratitude to the earth and to the feminine than we have even anticipated to this point. So I think we're moving in a direction that brings that balance more into our conscious awareness all the time.
And also, you know, I remember Union, really enjoyed it. It really moved me in a lot, and I could really relate to a lot of it. But there was a couple of things that I thought were really cool, and one of them was, and I haven't studied the Bible my whole life. I mean, I took some classes and was part of Lutheran at one time. But the book of Judas, which was left out of the Bible. Is that correct? And
yes.
But apparently, Judas talks about being asked by Christ to turn him in. And I started thinking on that, and maybe I was channeling something, and I thought, there's no way that Judas would have betrayed Jesus, let alone he did not need money because they could have whatever they wanted with a thought when they were around Jesus. And I believe many of the disciples also were able to do some of those things as well, just by being in that vibration of Mary and Jesus. And so to me, it was just like confirmation about what you wrote in your book about Judas actually. It was a choice he made. He was asked to do. He volunteered for that.
Well, he actually made the choice in the swing between worlds, mm-hmm. which is where each of us have an interview with the nameless ones. We all have had that interview, and that's what the readings that Joy and I do are about. We talk about the context of a life, like why are we here? And Judas's was in a very amazing way to find himself. So he had to go into aloneness and to be in a place, and he goes up into this mountain, I think it's called Boukhara, in France, and he actually knows that he's been looking for himself through lots of different means, you know, in terms of his behaviors and his activities and what he's longed for and so forth. And he has to go and find himself, and when he's found himself, then he will find Christ again. So he has this lifelong journey of feeling like a betrayer, even though he knows he isn't, because the outer world pushes that into his consciousness. And we've learned from this, I think, that the outer world has an opinion of us, has a way of adjusting the framework of our reality and wants us to fit into that. And we all have to find our own way, and we have to find that alone. And when we do that, we realize the perfection of the design of who we are, why we've learned the way we've learned, and what we're bringing to the planet. So Judas is such an amazing example of that consciousness, of finding truth within our own heart and soul. And yes, he was, in a sense, the one who loved Christ the most.
Willing to take the hit. Willing to take the hit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Willing to take the hit.
Yep. He took the hatred of humanity on.
Yes.
That's very moving. And I think because of that, he's a great teacher of love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I too wanted to ask you something, but about Jesus, and it's the controversial part in the book that has this. It talks about merging between Magdalene and Christ, and I've heard people talk about different things with that, and I wanted to ask if you would share with the visions and the essence and the truth of that experience and the mergings with the waterfalls is, how that really occurs, to kind of let people know that piece.
Well, there are several chapters in the book where Christ attends to Magdalene before her stoning, and he has this sense of, you know, when... if you're a massage therapist or you work with bodies, you know, you can have someone with you who is unclothed and at the same time be in a state of mind that has to do with service. So there are times when Christ is with Magdalene, that one time particularly before she's going to be stoned, where he kind of massages her body and helps her to move into that angelic reception so that she's ready to stand in front of these men and call out the truth to them. And then there's this, what you're talking about in the waterfall, where they're in the water and they're merging. And the way that they're merging is that they're merging with the kingdoms. So they're able to breathe in the water and breathe the water in and through them. And I don't know how they did that, but that's what they told me they did. Mm. So there's that sense of becoming other points of life, perhaps, or ways in which life is expressing, and to have that sense of merging with all that is versus being in one body and having conditions that exist within that body and make things impossible. There's kind of a sense of I'm I'm coming together with each of them, coming together with that sense of creation outside of time, outside of matter. Then there is one place in the book, what I was shown was that Judas Iscariot and Mary Magdalene were lovers and physical lovers, and they were being seen. They were seeing each other in a design. And it's interesting because Magdalene speaks about this in a very particular way. She says, Judas and I in Christ are serving the people. We do not live by the rules that they have created to keep things in the boxes that they think they have to be kept in. And she's initiated by Mother Mary, and Mother Mary says, okay, if you follow your conscience, follow the truth of who you are, then you can love in any way that you choose to love, because there are no rules about love. So it's very controversial in that sense. And what happens after Magdalene and Judas come together physically is that she speaks to Christ about that, because they're both in her heart at that point. And he says, can we have an experience such as that? And there are guidelines that come through in the book about touch, about penetration, you know, about the seed of a man coming into a woman, and that that's not something that Christ is, in a sense, commissioned to do. You know, he's to be androgynous, in a sense, while he's the Christ. And that's a very interesting statement and idea, because it feels to me, as I think about it, that all the way until the crucifixion, he is holding this space which brings the divine feminine and masculine into union without physically experiencing that, because that would in some way deflect from his intention in the lifetime. So yeah, there is a time when they come together, but they don't come together as a normal sexual act. They go into a unified place and experience union from the parts of themselves that have the divinity merging versus the bodies merging. And yeah, so it's very interesting, because there are many, many individuals who see something different. And I am staying with this because it's what I was told and what I was shown. Now, the energy of their union transcended physical experience and sustained that throughout their lifetime in the way that I was shown it. Now, they're not together for about 30 years after the crucifixion and the resurrection. And in my experience, Christ went to Kashmir and so forth, and India, and Magdalene went around and did her healing work. And so at that point in time, I'm not sure what happened. You know, it's not covered in the book, and I once asked, well, why didn't I have this and this and the other thing, and what I was told, actually, by Rosalind, you know, and the mother of Mary Magdalene, that I was doing enough. That the book had enough in it, you know, because we're refuting that Christ died on the cross. We're refuting so many different things, that Judas betrayed him, you know, that it was just enough for us to cover what we covered in the book.
Yes. Yes, I heartily agree completely, you know. Somebody else gets to do something that way too, you know.
Exactly.
But thank you for that. But I think in a nutshell, what you're saying is that any form of merging that occurred was not in the physical.
Correct.
Right?
In the way that we think of merging.
Yes.
You see, because they could come together without a sexual act and merge in the way of the physical without the physical.
Yes.
And I've had people talk to me about that. I had a woman who I went to nursing school with, and her husband came back from the war, and he was paralyzed from the waist down. And Dorothy and I spoke one time, and she said, we have the most amazing lovemaking.
Yeah.
And he was unable to perform physically, but it didn't matter. And it was that kind of feeling, you know, that we don't have to do what we think we have to do in order to get the result we think we have to get in order.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much more creative than that. And if you talk about subtle body fields and lots of energy and dimensions, you know, and bring those in, oh, goodness, it transcends anything that that the body alone can experience. Yeah.
This too, now that you're sharing it, what I hear, and you know, you wrote a very small book called Sexual Fulfillment, Ways to Experience Union Through the Soul. And I remember teaching workshops on that. And this, what you're describing on that, what I hear from the book, how this connects, is that it provides a way to heal sexual violence on the planet, understanding that this aspect of the soul and the energy are involved in the merging. And I, and let me know if you're, if you think I'm off on this, but I feel that's another example of healing violence that Christ and Magdalene actually showed, that you can expand through actual lovemaking rather than have it be like a third dimensional thing, don't you think?
Well,
I think it can heal violence and expand the consciousness is what I'm saying with what they did.
Well, I'm going to ask you to be a consultant for the movie, because that's a very interesting way of doing the bridging that, you know, we were talking about before in terms of what happened 2,000 years ago and how we can bring those ideas about truth into this time to support healing. So I'm with you 100% on that. That's awesome.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Absolutely.
I'd be honored.
No,
you know, whatever you need.
It's beautiful, Joy. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited, but when I read that part of that book, there's a profoundness to it that has to lead beyond the physical, like vibrationally. When you feel the vibration of it in the book, it's bigger than the body. Is what
yeah.
I'm really feeling.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yes. Okay. Teach.
And there's a lot of confusion, I think, that people have about seeking sexual connection and then finding that it's very empty.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I just wanted to...
And it,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, see, we're so good to each other. So I was just going to say that people, when they're doing that, and it's interesting in the reading I was given, it was explained to me how people seek union through sex, and they misinterpret that the empty sex is not going to bring them union. And that was something the ones with no names shared with me when I met them or reunited with them 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the emptiness, the seeking of union through sex and finding out that isn't where you find it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
go ahead.
I was going to add that, in the book you discuss that they are twin flames, twin souls, that Mary and Jesus, and that also is like a sacred union as well. I mean, we can have it with others, but, you know, having my own experience on that, when I just being around somebody that I knew was a twin soul, I felt this wave of love, and I felt it from my parents after they crossed over. And this is the love of the universe to me. It's this pure joy, this pure compassion, and it just happened in a moment. And I kind of think that's what you're talking about. At least I can relate to that. That wave of all-encompassing love is so much more powerful, in my opinion, compared to any physical thing we can do here. And, you know, I'd much rather that than the physical thing. And I think also with Jesus, too, and I'd want to see what you think of this flow, is that, you know, to stay on that focus, you can't really fall in love with anything physical or materialistic. If you're going to be on that journey, if you're going to hold that vibration, I think that's kind of the way I interpret it, that Jesus had to maintain that path. And what are your comments?
Yeah, I agree with you, TJ, because it felt like, first of all, I think he had a focus on the fact that he was chosen to represent the highest vibration in the universes that we're aware of, and that in every moment he was concerned about that and concerned about how he was going to do that, because he was a human being in my experience. And to have the vibration of purity, of true alignment with this invisible force of light and love was a focus point for him that was all-encompassing. And while all of those 33 years or whatever were going on, he was being trained. He was going to different mystery schools. He was focusing on the energy that he was here to bring and what was going to be the culmination of that. And after the crucifixion and the resurrection, when we went to France, he was healing for a lot of years. And then he went off. And, you know, as I say, I think there, if we look at our lives as turnings, that turning for him, the initial turning of being brought to earth to support this incredible story of love was the focal point that actually expanded his consciousness to the point that he could do that and that he had to cultivate that. He had to really work on that. And I agree with you. I think that that's what he did. He worked on that. And that was his primary way of relating to bring the gift that the creative energies of all of the avatars, you know, surrounding him were offering him this opportunity to accomplish.
Do you feel that Jesus ever, you know, there's talk that he was maybe other figures throughout the Bible. Did you ever get any sense that he lived in other times?
Well, it's interesting, TJ. I've known aspects of him that have lived since the time of 2,000 years. I don't know before that. I've never actually thought about that. I know, for example, that he was an aspect of someone called William Marshall. And William Marshall lived, I think he died in 1269. And he was the regent to four kings. He taught a lot of individuals to use swords, you know, and about horses. And, you know, he was a guy. And he was called the greatest knight that ever lived because he brought grace and order. And I channel him, and I think maybe Joy does too, and he has a very interesting perspective on supporting your comrades, what happens when you have to be in a violent situation, protecting whatever. Anyway, I think if we look at the story from 2,000 years to now, yes, Christ reappears a number of times, and so does Magdalene. I was in France, coincidentally, at the moment when Joan of Arc had her, you know, the celebration of her life and her death and so forth, and I was where there's a cathedral for Joan of Arc, and the flags were out for her that day. I mean, it was like, okay, you know, this is Joan of Arc Day, and I walked into the cathedral, and I thought, she was the Magdalene aspect, you know? So I think we are bringing back in a lot of different lifetimes the same vibration so that it continues and sustains itself through different avatars at different times.
Thank you.
Wow. So I had a question come up about the caves, the rituals in the caves, you know. And during that time, I know Mother Mary brought Mary Magdalene into the cave when she was entering puberty, and there were rituals that were done in the caves. And I also sense that isn't that part of the rituals that are the Magdalene rituals? And I know there were healing modalities that were done that are actually soul recognition processes, which is considered Magdalene's work, right?
That's accurate. In the cave, when the culture 2,000 years ago of the divine feminine in the matriarchy with Mother Mary and Magdalene's mother and the women of the community that were either experiencing puberty or older than puberty, so, you know, basically, you know, an age designation of 12, 13, you know, 14, whenever women were present with younger ladies. You know, the younger girls were always having that particular landmark before they were entering into the cave, because otherwise it wouldn't have been appropriate for them. And so in that particular scene, I see it as a scene, what happens is that there are images played upon Magdalene's mind about love and about sensuality and about sexuality and the difference between sensuality and sexuality and the space of being in a sacred union. So in a sense, she's initiated into sacred union with women, helping her to understand what that's like. And so when we do soul recognition, the intention is different, because it's basically to birth the soul into light so that the soul has a more profound effect on the lifetime, and then the psyche can acquiesce to that and open out to more of the vision and clarity that's present from the soul, so that we know more about our life and we know more about who we are and why we're here. And it just makes it easier for us to live if we have a more complete picture of what that's really about and all the levels that affect that. And in the cave, the idea was also that there be an easy introduction into the sexuality so that the experience subsequently was full of joy and celebration. And in soul recognition in the 21st century and the 20th and 21st century now, we're not as focused on that particular aspect of it, obviously, for a number of reasons. And the soul recognition does have the quality. It has the oils, you know, and the feathers and the drums and the crystals and all of the things that were part of the initiation ceremony for Magdalene.
Yeah, so it actually, what I hear you say is that it provides a very safe, honoring space for the soul to come fully present into the body, right?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And now it's done in water, too, correct?
Yes, it's done in warm water, which basically helps people relax and feel that they are being kind of reborn from their own womb, and It's a beautiful process, and we also are working with horses as well, because horses assist us to actually experience how we create relationship. Because if you're clearly in your heart and soul with a horse, the horse will respect and honor you and want to be close to you and come around, and if we're in our heads, the horses go away. And particularly if we're uncomfortable and we're pretending we're comfortable, the horses don't trust that, because they're prey animals and they can sense the congruence or incongruence of an individual. So we're able to share and teach a lot of principles without language. So those energies go right in to the being of the person, and they get the message, you know, and they are able to drop the pretense, actually, of whatever and whoever their identity is, and go into an awareness of what it's like to be in oneness with all things. So it's a very beautiful process, too. Yeah.
It is. It's very lovely. I can attest to both, you know, so thank you. I know, too, that you said you were open to sharing some of the book, reading it, and I just wanted to check in, too, and see if you have some events coming up that you want to share with people, that to let them know what's happening that you're aware of at this time.
Well, yes, on March 14th, and this is 2018, right? So on March 14th,
yes.
We're having a call with the Nameless Ones, that we're calling it the team call, TEAM. And we did a channeling on Valentine's Day, and the Nameless Ones took us to the center of the Earth, and there were many, many galactic forces there. And apparently the energy of this universal support of our evolution is ramping up. So we're going to have another call on March 14th, and all these things I'm going to mention are on our website, soulsupportsystems.org. And then the other thing is I'm going to do a CURE call, C-U-R-E call, on the 20th of March to actually ask the ones with no names about cancer. I've had many friends now dying mostly from breast cancer or metastases from breast cancer. And so I just want to ask some questions, and I want to give whatever support I can to anyone who'd like to be part of that. And we're going to have a soul recognition in May in Massachusetts in warm water. That's Mother's Day weekend. We're going to have a soul recognition in Whittier, North Carolina, and that's July 1st. I think it's June 28th to July 1st. We're having another warm water retreat in August in Massachusetts, August 7 to 12. And we have calls every month that people can join to just find the support that this kind of energy and intention can offer. And so all the things are on our website. You can donate if you'd like to Soul Support Systems, which is a nonprofit, or you can just participate. Sometimes we have fundraisers, and sometimes we just offer some programs and calls for people who'd like to participate.
Wonderful.
When do you start putting the movie together? When do you plan on doing that?
I'm going to France and with my editor and friend Jane, and we're going to do that in the month of June.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you'll keep us posted on all that, right?
I certainly will. And, you know, I was talking to Jane yesterday, and I said, you know, we're going to do the screenplay. And I said, oh, well, we're going to begin the screenplay, because I have this idea like we're just going to get it finished in 2 weeks. And, of course, we're not. But the sense of, you know, that it feels so much like the time is ripe right now. You know, so much is coming into my field of awareness about how easily this is going to happen for us.
Yeah.
And thank you, Joy, for suggesting that we do the vision board and getting that all together with us when we were at your place, your lovely space in Pennsylvania. And I just want to say one thing about Joy, and I want people to understand how rare a person Joy is, because she does counseling with the victims, what we call the victims of abuse. She does, you know, with children and families, and she also does that same type of counseling with those individuals who would be called perpetrators. And we all know that we're perpetrators of something and we're all victims of something. And so she joins the bridges between people and creates circumstances where they can find each other in a different way. And it's just so amazing. And I know many, many people who work with those who consider themselves victims, and yet they will not touch perpetrators, you know. And so that separation creates a distinction. And I was made aware many years ago that once we label someone a perpetrator in our own heart, it's very hard for us to see them as anything else. So someone who can make that possible is a rare gem, and that rare gem is Joy Melchizedek.
Wow, thank you. Thank you. And as long as they want to heal, I feel like there's always potential, and they start out as victims. So I think when we approach everyone as a wounded soul, it's easier to see the bigger picture. But thank you for saying that. And both TJ and Flo, you know you have my heart, and TJ, the work he does with making things possible for us, and Flo, everything you're doing. I want to thank you for gobs of everything. I mean, it's just amazing. I feel so honored to know, be, and work with both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you know, I forgot to say something. Last week, I recorded in a studio the whole entire I Remember Union book. So it's going to be available on audible.com, I think it is. And so we're just editing it, listening to it now, making sure everything is fine, and then we're going to be putting it out. And I'm praying it'll be out by Easter, the end of March this month.
Yeah.
So, but to do the whole book and to speak it all and to be in it again, it was just amazing, the vibration that I was, you know. And then I brought that vibration back into my life, and I can really feel it supporting me in many, many things that I'm doing. So I'm just saying it'll be available
That's
for purchase
wonderful.
Pretty soon.
That's
great.
Wonderful. I know you had taped portions, but that's
I was wondering
if you did this. Yes.
Yeah, I did the goddess portions, which were Magdalene portions, but this is the whole book. So it has Judas and Christ and Martha and the rabbi, you know, just different parts of her life and the story. And now it's all done. I'm just really excited about it. Yeah.
Lovely.
So I wanted to read the chapter that I think interfaces most clearly with the time of 2,000 years ago and the time now, and it's called Peace on My Mountain.
Okay.
I dreamt that I was awakened by gunshots. There were gunshots on the Mount of Olives. The people were fighting nation to nation, and there was no peace in the city of Jerusalem or in the sacred land of Israel. And in my dream, I arose from my bed and ran into the night. As I stepped onto the land, the Mother Earth trembled, and the sound of her tears was one with the sound of the gun's fire. As I looked into the night, it was not my world, not my time. It was the time of the remembering, the time when the people would turn from their fear and judgment and remember their unity. But first, the guns would fire, and the people would die and fly home. And the world would know killing and war, hatred and violence. And in my dream, I walked to the edge of the mountain, seeing all that would be, knowing all that would come to pass. And the wrath and the vengeance of the world came around me, and I shuddered, speaking these words to the hearts of the people. It has been many years since there was peace on my mountain. The design has afforded the people the opportunity to choose their destiny as it relates to themselves and others, and therefore to history. As I look at the choices, I shudder to think that we have created such an outcome. We had known it would take many years to be seen, the truth. But what was created in the meantime is difficult to behold. And yes, my garden was as any other garden, except that this place was a chamber of silence and sound, which bade the levels to create in form and to carry and store the knowledge within the trees and within the land and within the sacred spaces of being. There will again be peace in my garden, rest assured, for all of the plans and the revelations are coming within now and then, of course, without. Protect my garden, for herein lies the secret to the harmony which you seek to create in the world. We are now ready to be suspended within the minds of men, and our duty lies in the observance of the truest design of mankind which has ever been lived. And I've edited that a little bit, not put all of it in. It's quite a long chapter. But the idea that Magdalene has put forth is that she has seen what we are now experiencing, and we can claim that power back by moving into that experience of her garden, which is, of course, Gethsemane. She had, her home was the Garden of Gethsemane. That was her garden.
Would you say that?
She says that we've come to reclaim our power through the emergence of the truth of all time is part of that chapter.
And so many people are talking about that the earth is ascending and we are doing that with it. And this is all part of that as well. Do you see that, Flo?
Yeah, I do, TJ. You know, people have asked me for a long time, you know, how is this going to happen? Because the darkness is really strong and the greed and the capacity of humankind is so amazing, and are we going to attain that, and so forth. And what I keep feeling is that as we ascend, or as we open to the consciousness of love, that what actually is happening is we are lifting out of the darkness, and those who choose the darkness will in a very real way be in another earth, not our Earth. There will be a separation. And the times of rendering are the times of choice, and we have a choice, and we either make the choice to align with the divine within ourselves and each other, or we make the choice to disrespect life and to, in some way, not honor the creative forces and juices of our divinity within. So I feel like we are, and I guess one way of looking at that would be to say that in our reality, what we experience is what we're drawing to us, and as we draw light to us, we have more light. As we draw the love to us, we have more love. And as we provide that to the world, we experience it more. And then that kind of creates a container. And then we relate to more people from that container. And the vibration of that lifts us into another reality. And that's the reality that we draw to us and bring forth from us.
Is there anything else you want to add? Because, you know, we're getting towards the end of this. I thank you very much, Joy and Flo, but what else would you like to add to this?
I would just like to say that peace on Earth is not just a possibility. It's part of the divine plan of our free will. And that I want everyone to know this one sentence, you know, what we think we have lost is but the promise of what is yet to come. So keep that feeling and sense and knowing of peace very strongly in your heart. And then those of us who know that to be true will open more to that energy and vibrate with the sense of that being reality, and it will come to pass.
Truly lovely. So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Love you guys. Hugs and kisses. That was great. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much, TJ. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Flo, for coming on and sharing the book and your experiences and everything. It was wonderful to have you. And I can tell you, I've told people you're going to be on. They're already asking when. So I want to just affirm it will be posted. So
thank you, TJ.
Thank you
both very much. I so appreciate the work that you're doing in the world, TJ and Joy. It's so nice to be with you, and I so appreciate your energies and your intentions and your actions. It's just so congruent, you know. It's very lovely to be with you. Aww. Thanks.
Same here.
Aww, you too, honey. You too.
Thank you very much to both of you. Great, wonderful, divine souls who really are living the experience every day. So I salute both of you and bringing that divine feminine energy back in such a powerful way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.